Welcome to the Magdalen Voices, giving voice to those silenced for centuries through sacred conversations with beautiful, illuminating souls. I'm your host, spiritual business mentor, catalyst, and facilitator, Maria Estella. I serve soul-driven, heart-based entrepreneurs, Magdalens rising, and radiant beings just like you with the expansion and growth of yourself and thus your business, bringing to life that which you are here to birth, expressing your soul's divine purpose through the work that you do in this world. If you haven't already, I highly encourage you to join my sacred circle to stay connected and updated. You can do so on my website, mariaestella.com, where you can also find out more about me and my work, as well as the show notes for today's episode. And if you have ever wondered about your Magdalen connection and calling, and whether you are a Magdalen, I invite you to download the Magdalen Blueprint I have created for you. Go to mariaestella.com/AYM to get it. For today's episode, I am joined by Anaya Sophia. Anaya is an independent mystic of an almost forgotten faith, author of 7 books, and a teacher of Kundalini Yoga. She carries an oral transmission from the sacred feminine mysteries, which she weaves into all of her work. She lives in the Occitan region of southern France with her beloved husband, Pete Wilson, and together, in union with the land, they take people on their own grail quest into an immersive interaction where an initiation by the feminine principle is almost always guaranteed. They also run a B&B where individuals and small groups can come and stay, so make sure to check out the show notes for all of the links. In our sacred conversation, you will hear us talk about Mary Magdalen, sacred sexuality, the need for initiations and womb healing, and so much more. I hope you will enjoy it, but as always, take what serves you and leave the rest. It comes from our hearts to yours. Anaya Sophia, thank you for gracing us with your presence here on the Magdalen Voices. I am very excited for a deep dive into some topics that have been on my mind for a while, and I'm looking forward to having you share your wisdom and your knowledge and your experience.
Thank you.
The first question that I want to start us off with, and this may, you know, it feels like once we dive into it, it's going to just open up. It's about the term sacred sexuality. And I would love for you to share what you view as sacred sexuality and what it is, or how you see it, what your experience is, your knowledge, or with everything. So I'm just gonna start with that sacred sexuality, and please take the floor.
Bless you. Well, the way I see and feel and imagine that sacred sexuality could be, brackets, is a complete, well, first of all, it is approached in the understanding that it is a profound, holy healing. It is something that includes all of the being. The body, the heart, the womb, the horror, the mind, the spirit, the ancestors even. And if approached in that holy, reverent way, now this doesn't mean that it's boring. Some people, you know, before they approach sacred sexuality, they feel a little scared of letting go of what they've known sex to be.
Yes.
Imagining that sacred sexuality is going to be very tame, very fluffy, very light. It can be that, but it can also absolutely involve the passionate, rigorous nature of deeply loving one another's body. But the awareness is there that the soul, the light, the luminosity, the grace, all of that good stuff is absolutely in the mix. And so when we talk about sacred sexuality in Mary Magdalene, in Yeshua,
yes,
this is what we very much believe is happening, and that perhaps sacred sexuality was an aspect of preparation for him to be able to endure what he had to endure.
Yes, 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 absolutely. Can you elaborate a little bit on that in terms of like prepare him how? And I assume you're talking about the crucifixion and yes. You know, what came after, and even for her as well. But in terms of how, the thing is, for me, when I see, I completely agree that I think that sexuality was a big part of the preparation, mm-hmm. and also a part of, I don't know if I want to say everyday life, but more mm-hmm. like it wasn't this, it wasn't what it is today. It was more of a, and it's not even the word, because the word liberated is not necessarily right for me, but it's more that it was a practice as much as meditation was or prayer was or you know, physical exercise, like things like it was. Does that make sense? Like
absolutely. I mean, even if we just look at this yogically, the physical body absolutely gets irradiated by light, by breath, by blood, by lymph in the sexual act. That, you know, that's us looking at things with our doctor yogic binoculars.
Yes, yes.
To say things like that doesn't happen is untrue. It is a very invigorating, stimulating and awakening practice, if you like, for the body.
Yes.
Now, if you bring in the full waves of love to people who aren't afraid to feel how deep that love could be, aren't protecting from getting hurt, definitely not playing some sort of cat and mouse game. So now you have the full heart also irradiating through one another's more than body and rest of existence.
Yes.
Now, I'm pretty sure that those two would have absolutely been invoking prayer and the Holy Spirit to oversee, to bless, guide. So now we have a really big practice process going on.
Yeah.
And they knew that. Mary knew that. That is my feeling.
Yes. In what way?
I believe this was her wise women medicine.
Yes.
I believe whether she was a highly trained and esteemed priestess or whether she was just a natural woman who was very close to the primordial rhythms of life, or both, she, body and preparation of body was her business.
Yes.
This was innately woven into her being.
Yes. Yes. And yes, you. I want to, because one of the things, that's the thing is, I for me, they came and, you know, were here to help shift the paradigm and, you know, insert a new way of being and doing. And part of that was sexuality as well.
Mm.
But first of all, in making her a prostitute, quote unquote, and him a god of sorts and not man.
Yes.
Basically, you cut them off from, you know, she's a whore and he's a god. So there's no sacredness in any of, well, there may be some for some in him being a god, but by taking his manhood away, by taking him, like, by stripping him of his humanity, I think it was a great disservice, and it got kind of a lost, but it's not lost because somehow we still have access to it. And I know that you have access to it, and from you access the lineage or the rituals or the, and how do you, I was going to say, how do you know, that's not the right question, but how do you access that, whether you're as a couple or single? Like, how do you access your sacred
sexuality?
Well, it's a very now journey.
Yes.
It's very prevalent, and it's calling everyone to it, because I truly believe sex as we know it to be, you know, sex that we see in the movies, sex that we read in the magazines, yeah, is a kind of trap keeping you held in a certain vibration or a certain exchange of intimacy, if there's any intimacy at all. Yeah. So it's actually a little bit of a red herring. Yeah. You know, the suggestion to carry on in that way isn't going to lead to anything. And if we haven't realized this by now, you know, I'm nearly 50. It's really apparent. Yeah. It has a limitation. And the rest of my being knows that there's so much more. Yeah. But the first things that mostly women, and men as well, but it's mostly women, will come across when they start their sexual journey, yeah, is these huge emotions around sexual shame, guilt, regret, and probably quite a genuine dislike or disgust of the physical body, the way it looks, the way it behaves, nakedness. So I just want to flag that up for the ladies, that all of those really strong feelings are kind of sadly to be expected, because we've been grown up with this strange religion that has isolated sexuality. And exactly as you said, made Jesus a god and Mary a prostitute, both unattainable, unreachable beings, you know, totally out of reach. Yes. And of course, the whole celibacy thing. So if we're from the West, we will have some very strange ideas about sexuality and about the heads of the faith that we have been brought up in.
Yes.
That doesn't mean we're Catholic or Christian ourselves, but I bet our parents are, and I bet we grew up with that.
Yes.
So even if someone didn't say to us directly, we would have picked up that sexuality is kind of like taboo.
Yes.
There's a part of us that's excited and likes it, and then there's a part of us that is like utterly ashamed if we get caught for liking it.
Yes.
So this is the kind of psychic work that must be seen, and with reverence, yeah, gently brought into wholeness.
Yeah.
So it's a very gentle journey. It really must have the heart leading the process. A big old courageous heart that's willing to feel those feelings of guilt and shame, because they're not nice. Oh my God, they're not nice. They go to some very strange places on the inside, back to childhood. Well, but that's the process that I took. It was kind of like an emotional healing.
Yeah.
Being willing to remember all the uncomfortable moments I've ever experienced. You know, those awkward, inappropriate moments with teachers, family members.
Yeah.
Just getting in there with my breath, with my prayers, and being available to cry or rage. Because all of this stands in the way before we can sacredly unify with another one.
Yes. It's so beautiful. And I think what you're describing, you know, it's there's really no way, and that's what I like to say, there's no way around it. It's through it. So you can't do the healing without moving through it. And as you were speaking, I was seeing all of these moments, even within my own life, like where all of the emotions you were mentioning, everything I felt that and I feel that, so I see it. I wonder, because you were talking about how, you know, you're close to 50. I am 42. I have to remember how old I'm 42. And the one of the things that I've seen, and I don't know this, and this is even older than the both of us, but kind of with the sexual liberation, or like of the 60s and the 70s, the way that I see, first of all, I love that we're moving towards a more equal world in terms of, you know, sexuality and so forth, and for both men and women and whoever, you know, how they want to. But I also see that in that it became the act of sex and not sacred. So people, you know, I'm not going to judge. If you want to, you know, sleep with everything that moves, that's fine. Go ahead and do that. But the way that I see it, that for me doesn't speak sacredness or sacred sexuality. So is there a step where it's like, first you like, you realize that you're liberated, and then you screw everything on two legs, and then there's an awakening, another awakening. Like, it seems like there's layers or steps or unveilings in this, or initiations even, if that's the right word. What do you see in terms of that, in terms of the sexual liberation that happened in the 60s and the 70s, and then?
Well, I feel it all depends on where you are when you start this process, mm-hmm. of awakening. Yep. Your deeper understandings of sexuality. If you have been a withdrawn or suppressed man or woman, then it would probably be a good idea for you to dare to come forward and be a little bit more adventurous. And to, you know, to learn a few things. Yes. Like, no way, is that possible? Wow. And that learning process might not be really under the banner of sacred sexuality, but it's under the banner of awakening to sexuality. And so, you know, you experiment and you try all sorts of weird and wonderful things, and you know, and all the themes of relationship that are on offer these days.
Yeah.
I kind of feel that's important, but then I suspect there will be a natural. But if there isn't, maybe hold it in your mind that maybe the next step after your adventure, your great adventure, then maybe to come back to the midline and then rein all that sexual energy back in to the self, and maybe take a more vertical approach, because the experimentation, I always see that's horizontal.
Yes,
you know, you're on the earth, you're doing your thing. But then at a certain point, back to base. Now let's use this energy for a vertical ascent. And at that moment, you might call in a beloved other who is also ready for the vertical journey. And so there's kind of like a sealing of the sacred container. It really is a one-on-one now. You've done your horizontal. You know what's out there. You know the beginning, the middle, and the end of that story. Now you're wanting the great unknown.
Yes.
And the sealing of the bridal chamber. Yes. And the climbing of ascending energies, using sexuality as the healing and the force of ascension. There's no doubt about it. Sexual energy is one of the most powerful fuels within our body.
Yeah.
And it can absolutely heal physically, psychologically, spiritually, and emotionally. Yes. Or you might begin the journey in the completely opposite camp. You might have been a very promiscuous man or woman. You know, you've spent the first 30 years of your life being extremely horizontal, you know, living in Pune, trying this, that, and the other. And I must say, that's closer to my past. I was a little bit of a young adventurer. So I knew then again, you'll have to rein that energy in and just say, okay, that was great. But now I want the vertical. So now I want to make it more subtle, more refined, and lovely words like elegant, dignified, grace. So you can see the alchemical nature of it all. If you're one thing, in my opinion, if you're one thing, you must become another.
Yes.
To have the full spectrum of wisdom and embodiment. But then come to the midline. And that is in both ways. So if you're quiet and suppressed and shy,
yes.
be adventurous, rein it in. If you're adventurous and promiscuous, look to become subtle.
Yes.
Look to become more refined, more elegant. Rein it in. Come to the midline. Because you can always draw on your adventurous energy.
Yes.
These things don't go away, but they get met with the opposite.
Yeah.
And then you have the full palette of sexual expression.
Yes. I love the, there's a gentleness and a wholeness to what you're, to what you were describing. It's, I love how it's in, you know, it's encompassing or encompassing both, without any, judgment or, denial, but it's more of a dance or an integration. That's so beautiful. One of the things for women, and I don't know if, because since men don't have a womb, there, I assume that, because again, there's a difference between, how do you see, and maybe we should define this. So there's, for me, there's a difference between men and women, and then feminine and masculine. And we're all carrier, whatever gender we assign ourselves to, I see us as having the divine masculine and the divine feminine energies within ourselves. And that's got nothing to do with being a man or a woman or any other gender for that matter. But there is a, there's a healing, not if you've been, I guess it's either or, like there's a, because we, as women, we carry our part of it, we carry our creativity and our expansion, our growth in our womb. Mm. And I see there's a need for, not a need for, but for healing. Mm. And in terms of sacred sexuality, what is womb healing, and how does it, how can we benefit from that?
Mm. Well, womb healing and sexual healing, I feel, are absolutely hand in hand. I see that the feminine, the women, have access, easier access, to the creative ingredients needed to manifest on the inside. And she absolutely just has this knack of being able to gather physical resources on the outside. That's kind of like one of woman's greatest gifts.
Yes.
She is the resourcer. She can pull and draw into her womb, invisibly and visibly, every ingredient, everything that is needed to manifest. So step number one, Western woman kind of first needs to realize this with her mind, that this is possible. And of course, she's going to come up against unworthiness, doubt, confusion, because none of this stuff has been taught. Whereas man, masculine, he has the ability to bring through a very still and steady architecture of what it is to manifest. What is this we're creating together? See, us ladies, we can have a fabulous idea, and then it's gone. And then we'll have another one, and then it's gone.
Yes.
And so we can often spiral around with all of our resources, but we don't actually see it through, you know. And that is the great teamwork of the masculine and the feminine, whether it's on the inside or together in partnering. Yes. Because the man can bring through this elegant,
yes,
diamond-tipped, yes, piece of architecture that is the idea, the concept. And he can hold it steady until it is done. And the feminine can gather and dance and weave and just bring it all into manifestation.
Yes.
Whereas the man, I believe, very much so, if it's just left to masculine energy, all that will be is the architecture. No flesh, no flesh on the bones, no movement, no breath of life, no creation on the outside, just a strong and steady idea. So we totally need each other. Now, when I started doing my womb healing, I was a yogi, and all of my inner work, my beingness, was up here at the third eye.
Yes.
So I knew I had to come down. So I literally sent my gaze down into the womb. And I thought, well, that was easy. You know, I've just shifted. I'm now hanging out just below my waistband. But then a couple of weeks later, I said, okay, that was too easy. I don't believe I'm in my womb. I really don't. I think it's all just an idea. So then I came out of the third eye. I came out and I came to the area between my legs, and I used my consciousness to go up through the yoni, through all the bits and pieces along the way, the cervix, the G-spot, the clitoris, everything, the labia. And then I realized, this is a bumpy, horrible, nasty ride. And then I knew, this is it. This is the genuine path. Yes. Until I can gracefully enter my own genitalia, if you like, and rise up through the middle and come into the womb the same way I would have come out when I was a child. If I can't do that journey in love and peace and grace, then I got healing to do. And I must say, hallelujah, 8 years later, I can go through there, and it's like just a natural landscape, you know, with trees and meadows and wildflowers. There's nothing about that inner world now that makes me flinch. But at the beginning,
I guess.
My goodness.
And again, you said something very important there. It was not something that happened overnight. First of all, I love how, because that for me is also one of the reactions I have. If things are too easy, it's not that it's too easy, but there is a sense of,
yes,
wait, is this a smoke and mirrors thing, or is this really what it is? That's number one. So that's okay, this was easy. Everything's perfect. Everything's fine. And then the second thing you said, you said 8 years, and I can imagine it, you know, those were 8 years of work.
Yes.
And that seems to be, I don't know, in New Age or just like spirituality overall, there's this, you know, fluffy rainbows and unicorns and butterflies. And I believe that is a space we can come to in terms of you mentioned the meadows and the flowers and so forth. But it's also been probably a very bumpy ride. Like, it's been a lot of healing of going through and doing this. And I'm mentioning it again because it's again about doing the work. One of the things that I've found is that we want the healing, but we don't want the work.
We don't want to feel that stuff.
Yes. So that is. Absolutely beautiful and a great point and an idea for people to, and that's for a woman. What if you're a man? Do you enter the same way, or do you, like, you're not a man, so I don't know if you can.
Oh, I've spoken to so many men about this, obviously, and yes, there's a little bit of sexual healing to be done for the men. But overall, and I'm really taking into consideration many cultures, many traditions, many age groups, men are kind of like quite comfortable with this area. It's mind that is causing them the distress and the bumpy journey. I mean, every single one of us, I believe, in the West will have to do some significant sexual healing on their own bodies and their emotional relationship with that part of them.
Yes.
But the man's journey is nowhere near equal to the woman's journey. This is where woman has put everything.
Yes. Yes.
Leading cycles, babies, gynecological practices and processes, mother contracts, bleh, it's all down there. Whereas the man has his debris in the mind on repeat, you know, just wearing him down day after day. So it's kind of like our work is in different locations, different zones.
And I think I read somewhere that, like, for men, it's also a matter. First of all, they're touching their penis every day. Like they're always in, so they're always in contact with
absolutely and sharing one another.
Sorry,
you know, it's like you see each other peeing in the urinal.
Yes.
No big deal.
No, and it's interesting when you mentioned the you know about the monthly bleeding and the cycles and so forth. Because I remember very early on as a teenager, you know, I'm Danish, and in Denmark it was called, people would call it shit. So it, that's the direct translation is shit. Mm-hmm. And you know, I have my shit, and I remember very early on thinking, well, why do we call it shit when it's like, it's telling us, first of all, I'm not pregnant.
Yes.
Which to me, at, you know, when you're a teenager, that's a good thing that you're not pregnant. If you're sexually active, it's a good thing for you to know. And also I always, but, and so I decided for me, I stopped calling it that very early on because that for me was again, and so it's a separation or like a removal from that.
Yeah.
And in terms of, cause for me, part of, you spoke earlier on about how, we in the Western world, whether we're, religious or not, have grown up in some form of religion or not, we have this, I don't know if it's a dogma or ideology, but there is this separation between you know, our physical body and sex and then the rest.
Yes.
Part of it for me, in terms of the church, there's been a suppression of the divine feminine. And for me, the suppression of the divine feminine has not only hurt women, but has hurt men as well. Whether, you know, whether no matter what your sexuality is, you can be, you know, gay or straight or, you know, bisexual or whatever you have. I see it as because men have not been taught or allowed to have that contact, you know, again, it becomes very hollow. What you mentioned before, when the divine masculine builds the structure, then she fills it out. Yes. And so I see men as having been, quote unquote, I don't like the word victims, but as much.
Yes, most definitely.
As, whereas women, it's been on both the external plane as well as the internal plane.
Yes.
But I also love how she when I say she's found her way back. Like I know you're living in southern France. You're smack in the middle of where she was Mary Magdalene was said to reach the shores after being cast out of Jerusalem. When did she begin showing, like, when did you realize that it was her? Like, when did you go into I don't want to say Christian side, because it's not, I don't see her as a Christian. She was probably something else. But when did she begin showing up for you? Like, how did you, like, oh, hello. How did she begin showing up for you?
Well, if I can just go back to what you were saying about men being also part of this great devastation, and then we'll come forward to that bit, because this is important for me. So it's like before the Christian church, you know, the places where we mostly find churches and springs, especially when they're together, we can guarantee that would have been a temple of sorts, run very much by a goddess tradition. And in those beautiful times, there were sacred priestesses. And if you can really imagine, and it might take a great stretch of the imagination, that these practices, the temple and the temple priestesses were absolutely holy women. In my mind, they actually glow with gorgeous golden heart energy. And they would take people into their arms, whether they be man, woman, girl, or boy. And they would use the whole of their body in the most holy and appropriate ways to help with childbirth, dying, men coming back from the war, women going through some sort of depression, menopause, menstrual cycles, something, loss of a loved one. So these women didn't sit and talk to you about your problems. They bathed you, they undressed you, they caressed you, cocooned you, rocked you, sung to you, breathed and prayed over you. So it was a very embodied form of medicine. And absolutely serving that vertical access. So when that was taken away, and it was almost taken away overnight,
yes,
it was simply severed and forbidden.
Yes.
And the priestesses had to run away, never to be seen and never to practice again. Now, according to men, they have now lost their pathway to the heavens, to the holy, to the divine. Without those priestesses and temple, where the heck do they go? Where do they go when they're battle-weary, psychologically fragmented because of some harsh and long-drawn-out war? You see what I mean? And so slowly, this dark cloud came to us all without that beautiful feminine wise escortship to the lap of the divine. And then, lo and behold, along comes another religion, patriarchal in its core values, and, you know, the figurehead is a god, and the woman, she's a prostitute.
So,
that's why it really, the loss of the sacred feminine has absolutely terribly impacted man as well. But then, when did I first meet Mary Magdalene? Well, it was 1998, and I was sat on a beach just outside Brighton in the UK. Seriously, I was journaling away in my diary. Up until that point, I'd always been talking to Jesus, Yeshua, kind of in a Christian way, I suppose, but I didn't like going to church. So I kind of liked Jesus in my way. I loved Jesus in my way. And it was all on the inside. So it didn't involve religious study, didn't involve the church. I wasn't a Catholic, so I never went through all of those things you do when you're a Catholic. I found him my way. And for some bizarre reason, I'm writing away in my diary, and I can see and hear him, and then in comes a woman's voice, and she actually said, "Come to me. You will find me in the south of France." I knew nothing about Saint Marie de la Mer or Saint Baume. I knew nothing of the Magdalene sites. All I knew was I can hear a female voice at that same vibration as Yeshua saying, "Come to me. Come to me in the south of France." Days, maybe a week later, I had an invitation to host a yoga retreat in the south of France, where I live now.
Yeah.
And I knew the two were this. Okay, here we go. This is what that voice was pointing towards. And that really was that.
Isn't it beautiful how, because I feel as though that he is, and I had a very vivid, it's because I was going through some frustration or irritation with the church. Denmark is not a Catholic country, we're Protestants, and there are churches everywhere, and I was feeling frustrated with how the church was built upon him. And he said to me, I was driving by a church and he said, but this is the way that people know of me. Like, this is how, because all across the, you know, everybody knows what who Yeshua was or is or whatever. And what I've found through my journey is that it's, and again, speaking to Magdalens all across the globe, is there seems to be, the starting point, but there's always a point where he invites her in. There's always some point when we're ready, I suppose, then she gets invited to the table as well. And then we're like, we just thought it was about Yeshua. And then all of a sudden she's there. And we're like, I call it the unveiling. Cause it's like, or there's an unveiling of sorts where you were now ready to see. I was a student and am a student of A Course in Miracles that has been, you know, has flooded the world as well. And is said to be, Yeshua is said to be the source of that. And she's not mentioned, quote unquote, anywhere. But she is, I find her to be in the course very much. And actually I did one of the episodes, because I did it with someone who studied Mary's Gospel and A Course in Miracles. And there are so many similarities. There are so many. I saw in Mary's Gospel, I can't remember, but I have it on Instagram somewhere. I'll link to it in the show notes. Where word for word, he's saying something that is written in A Course in Miracles as well. And that was, to me, was mind-blowing. How can two things that are written almost 2,000 years apart have the exact? It was just mind-boggling how that. But I see as like she's being brought in as well. Always, he always at some point brings her to the table. So what have you found in southern France? Because I know that a lot of people go there, but like what have you? I want to go as well. I haven't gone yet, but
Well, I've been back and forth now about 18 years to this particular southwest corner in the Pyrenees, which is also home to the Cathars.
Yes.
Now you could say the Cathars are the spiritual descendants of Mary.
Yes.
So only yesterday. You know, every day I'm out looking around and researching and walking and you know, lifting up shrubbery here and there. I am very proactive in getting to know this land as intimately as I can. Because my feeling, this is one of my strange, obscure, Gnostic feelings. So if the Cathars were Mary and Yeshua's spiritual descendants, that they had within them the way, the real, simple, beautiful, pure transmission of that beautiful faith as they would have taught it. Now, as we know, this area was absolutely, the Cathars were exterminated, basically, that's the best way of putting it, by a crusade, the crusade. Now, if all of those Cathars and heretics were burnt at the stake, which we know they were, then their bodies, their blood, their bone, their hair, their everything has been dispersed into the earth. So the legacy, the heritage, it's in the land. And that is absolutely and utterly what I have found to be true. And that's why we're out in the land, not reading books, in the land as often as possible. And as I said, I've been here 18 years, and even yesterday, there was a significant, significant find. For some reason, I always knew there was a Source de Magdalene in a town around here called Rennes-les-Bains. Now, I have been preoccupied with this other place on the other side of the valley called the Seat of Isis. So that's where I take my groups. That's the big moment. We make our way to the seat of Isis and we sit on it. And only yesterday, on the other side of the valley, did I go looking. It's not as if I've been looking for 18 years and never found it. Suddenly, oh, I want to find the source of Magdalene today. And we found it. And it just, I'm now, it's like snakes and ladders. I'm back to zero again. I know nothing. I know nothing about this place. It is mysterious. It is Gnostic. It is ever revealing.
And I think you mentioned again. I want to draw attention to what you're actually saying, because there is a surrender, but there is an absorption of wisdom rather than that happens through your vibration and body. So so there's a, I don't know if I'm saying it, but it seems as though there's an absorption of wisdom and knowledge as much as a download. Because we're always talking about downloads, but what you're talking about is not necessarily a download, but it's actually wisdom and knowledge that's already on this plane that's just hanging around, and then you're absorbing it.
Yes. Ooh. Exactly right. Oh. Exactly right. And I must say that biggest absorption remembrance came when I read the Gospel of Mary Magdalene.
Yes.
With the translation by Eve de Loop, or Saint Loop, Eve de Loop.
Yeah.
Now, she says that she witnesses the Lord in the new, or the nous, N-O-U-S. Which is interesting because that's French for we. And she had it in the translation. It categorically says this is not the spirit and this is not the soul. It's a space, it's a sliver of awareness in between the two. So I always saw that as the Vesica Pisces. And she's hanging out in that little eclipse area in the mind, in the, you know, the deep Gnostic mind or the inner worlds. It's not her spirit, it's not her soul, it's the new, it's the in-between place. And so off I went in search of that place on the inside, and lo and behold, you can find it relatively easy, but unfortunately you kind of lose consciousness once you get there because it's so high vibration. You sort of get there and go, I'm here. Oh, I've gone. After a while, practice, you can hang out in that area a little bit longer, and yes, that is where the wisdom is rolling in from. So if you go to these places, go to that place on the inside, you're just going to be a giant big sponge.
Yes, I can feel it, I don't know what it is, but I can sense it.
Yes.
There's so many things I want to go over, but our time is almost up. One of the things that I know that you speak about is the need for initiations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate or expand on that?
Well.
This is going to be good. I can just tell from the way you're...
Well, obviously, you know, living in this area, there's caves and woodlands and standing stones and springs. And when that body of ours is in an initiatory process, it's like all the psychic doorways fly open because you're genuinely afraid. You are afraid. And you need to be afraid, but it's not fear as in, I can't do this. It's afraid as in, oh my God, this is the unknown. I have no clue what's going to happen next. Okay, I surrender. And in that moment of intensity, not only is it the chakras, it's more than that. It's everything. flies open, and that adult is like a little babe, totally innocent and able to receive at the deepest, incomprehensible levels. And that is what we, my God, that is what we need. It's not enough to read. And it's not even enough to wander through the countryside, you know, having your absorbing moments.
Yeah.
Initiation is even greater than that. And so this could be things like sleeping a night in the cave.
Yeah.
Sleeping a night by those standing stones. Taking yourself to that sort of quaking and unknowing edge and being prepared to allow what needs to be received to come.
Yes.
So initiation is a powerful kind of like psychic dynamic of fiercely opening up all the doors in that being. That being is totally unprotected in this moment. There's no veils, there's no guards, there's no nothing in the way. They are about to go boom, one-on-one connection with powerful truth.
Yes.
And I believe priestesses, or whatever we want to call ourselves, we must open spaces like that.
Yes.
To happen.
Yes.
Whether it's to say, hey, let's spend the night in the cave, you know, we're not doing it. We're just taking the people to the places where it's likely to happen. And of course, you know, we're going to tell a few stories. We're going to burn the fire.
Yes.
We're going to wear a hooded thing. You know, we're going to play our role as a human to bring on the atmosphere and the ambience.
Yes.
But then it really is, fingers crossed,
yes,
the divine is going to come.
Yes. And there's the, you know, in terms of that, there's a, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't force it to drink. You're not. And also, do you think we've become, because one of the things that I feel that we've lost the ability to hold space for that, hold space for initiations, both within ourselves and within others. It's like we've become so, and that is part of me, because the way that I see it is that we've become so entrenched in patriarchy and the shadow masculine that we've lost the ability to to allow ourselves to fall. Basically,
I think it's twofold. Exactly what you're saying. We doubt that this is possible.
Mm.
We've come so far away from that deep mystical feminine on the inside that we sort of like, nah, it's not possible. And then there's the other flip, which is the new age, which is the space holders who believe they are doing it. So they do a big song and dance about, you know, I'm going to channel this and I'm going to bring it into the room and everyone's going to have a powerful experience. People are like, I didn't feel anything. Whereas the midway point, you've healed your doubt.
Yes.
You know you can personally make contact with that Gnostic wisdom that is just breathing down that person's neck. But you know, in all decent humility, this has got nothing to do with you. You're sat there, fingers crossed, praying for the unknown to happen for that, on behalf of that person.
Yes.
And I think that's the space to be holding.
Yes.
You know you have the authority to do this, to be part of this, but you are not the one doing this.
No, there's that humility, understanding.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm a mentor, and my work is very structured and organized and business-wise and so forth. But in my session, there is a clear understanding on my behalf that it is through me. It's I am just the vessel or the channel. I am not whatever. It's keeping that humility in not in a you know in a not in a not in a way, not there's, you know, it's again, it's about owning your own strength and your own being, and then dance with the universe. I'm not sure if I'm,
yes,
but it's,
yes.
it's the weaving of those two. Where do you think we're going now? If we're going anywhere, I don't know.
Well, I personally cannot deny the velocity and speed and absoluteness of tremendous and quantified, if that's such a word, change and transformation we're all in, all of us. I'm writing a book at the moment called Fierce, Fierce Feminine, One Woman's Journey to Find Her Authentic Voice. And I'm understanding that all of us, all, the whole of humanity, I believe, is having this dark night of the soul. And if you've had one personally, then you know what that's like for one person.
Never tried it, never did it, not interested in doing it again. I'm just kidding. Yes.
But I can't help feeling we're all going through the dark night of the soul, and there is a genuine, I'm not sure we're going to come out the other side. But to make peace with that, and like, okay, so whilst we are here, you know, to leave the world better off than where how we found it, how we came to it, in a state of cleanliness and joy and vibration and gratitude and all of that good stuff, to live fully. You know, if you're putting some sort of healing step, you're shelving it, get it off the shelf ASAP and take it today. I don't know where we're heading, but I know we are in a very genuine and real quantum leap, and we may come out the other end of that. If we do, we're going to be totally different.
Oh, yes.
This is going to be totally different. Awesome. We're going to be quite a nice bunch at the end of it. If we don't come out of it, bleh. I don't know. But using what we have to magnificently live.
Yes.
Live this process fully and completely.
And if we don't, the thing is, if we don't come out of it, that's, and this is the way I see it, if we don't come out of it, it's a cleanse. It's like it's a fire. It's a Kali energy. It's a yeah. burning clean of everything. Then everything will be wiped, so yeah. that we can rise.
Yes,
that's the way I view it, a dark night of the soul is how.
Yes,
having gone through one very long one.
Yeah,
felt like forever. So there is that when it's the darkest, there is also a surrender, but it's a, I now understand for me personally. And that's the way when you talk about the world is that it had to burn away everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you cannot build a house on sand. You
no.
have to build it on solid ground.
Yes.
And when I say that, for me, that meant, you know, limiting beliefs, fears, worries, doubts, everything had to be stripped or not taken away, because I don't believe in a whatever. But that's the dark night of the soul. And as you say, we may or may not come out of it. And I love how, because I share the same, you know, we may or may not come out of it, but no matter whether or not we come out of it, all is well.
Yes.
Yes.
So. Yes. I can either be a really nice human at the end of it,
yes.
or a fine piece of compost.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. Yeah. And I must say, in these last couple of years, I've been really working with this, you know, really taking my mind to that possible end point.
Yes.
And only now can I make these little fun remarks.
Yes.
You know, because I've seen in my own imagination, a possible extinction. I've seen what could happen. I haven't felt, obviously, because the whole thing's manufactured. But yeah, either a fabulous human or a nice bit of compost.
And I love how there's no fear or you know, scare in that. Because, you know, most of people, when they talk about, quote unquote, end of the world, they all doom and gloom. And it's yeah. I love how there's absolutely no, there's no fear. There's just love.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be in the moment.
It's not, you know, I'm not saying that to say that it's going to be like, the process, I'm not talking about the process. Yeah. Will be crap. We know that that's not going to be funny in any way, shape or form. Everything's going to be revolting. There's going to be chaos and so forth, but to come to peace with the understanding that I can either be compost or a fine piece of human. A very, I don't want to say nice, but it's a peaceful way.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It feels peaceful. It feels healthy. It feels honest.
Yes.
There really is this great big question mark.
Yes. True.
Yeah.
And we could go on, but I want to thank you for having, again, graced us with your presence. I'm going to, in the show notes, be leaving links to your websites, not to your websites, to your website, to your books. And I know that you do these, you do retreats and you have an Airbnb and there's a whole lot of things. And I'm going to make sure that I include everything in the show notes. So I just want to let people know, whether they're watching or listening, that they can go to the show notes and they will find everything there. Are we complete, or do you have any last remarks that you want to get off your chest?
No, I feel complete. I feel complete, but I do want to say, God, I hope you make it to France.
I will. I actually have been. I do.
So you.
Yes. I will. I will come by.
Wonderful.
Yes. So thank you for your time and, yeah, God bless.
Yeah, you too. Peace be with you.
Thank you.
That is what we have for you in today's episode of The Magdalene Voices. I hope it served you well. If you are listening to this via podcast, know that you can go to my website, mariaestela.com. That's mariaestela.com for all of the deeds and the details. Finally, I hope you will take a moment to either leave us a comment or review and share it with your friends on social media. God bless.